secondly, tonight's speakers who will speak for around 40 minutes.
We need one of them bomb mics.
My name is Juana Minetti. I don't know what this is here. And this is actually the first time that I'm doing a chair speaking on a microphone. Actually, this is the first time I'm actually speaking on a microphone. So it's kind of weird for me. Firstly, welcome to any newcomers to Narcotics Anonymous. If you think you have a drug problem, you are in the right place. You know, I got to Narcotics Anonymous and, you know, I didn't really come to Narcotics Anonymous because I wanted to stay clean. I came here because I felt that if I come to Narcotics Anonymous, there's going to be something that will get me out of trouble, you know. And I'm going to tell you a bit about my story because I've got 40 minutes. I've got 40 minutes. So you're going to hear my story. I'm actually from Cape Town, South Africa. I've been in London for about 6 years now. And I guess, you know my story is pretty much the same like any other addict story. You know, when I got here, I didn't know that. You know, when I got here, I really thought that I was different. Not only did I think I was different, I felt different from other people. You know, I heard somebody share in a meeting recently that thing about having that feeling that someone's going to discover me. You know, I had that feeling as well. I didn't know it before I got here. You know, it's only once I came here I started getting perspective on how I was feeling and how I was behaving, you know. And you know, my using career lasted for about probably 3 years. You know, I started using while I was at school, my last year of school. I got introduced to sort of to the party scene, you know, going clubbing and stuff. And you know, I just want to say that, you know, a lot of people kind of, you know, they come to an end and they kind of tell this story. And I just want to say that, you know, my story is really just my story. If you hear anything here tonight that you don't like about my story, that's okay. You know, this is simply my experience and it's my opinion. You know, and like they say, the official views of NA is found in our literature. You know, so anything that you don't like, you know, that's just my experience, you know. And I didn't come from a dysfunctional home. You know, my family is pretty normal, my mom, dad, and my sister. Never been neglected. I haven't been abused. But, you know, I don't know, you know, through doing step work, you know, like what I've come to find is that I've heard a lot of people saying, you know, I always felt different, I always felt, you know, out of sorts. And, you know, I've got lots of friends who are civilians. You know, they're not in this fellowship. And they've shared with me that they also felt a bit different when they were younger. So I don't really know what it has to do. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. You know, but you know, I started using at school. You know, I heard people were doing this, you know, different kind of drugs. And they were going clubbing every weekend. And I was really attracted to that. You know, I was really attracted to listening to the stories that they were saying. You know, I went here this weekend. You know, and I got really messed up. And I thought, you know, like at the time, it's like, I didn't think I want some of that. It was more like, I was just attracted to that. It was more like, yeah, that's my natural flow. That's where I need to go, you know. And so very soon I started hanging out with kids at school. And I started using with them. You know, we go out on weekends, we go clubbing, and I got into the whole ecstasy thing. You know, and I remember when I took it, it was kind of like, it was that feeling, it was so weird, because it was that feeling that I got that it just agreed with me instantly. You know, I just felt like, wow. You know, besides the fact that, you know, all my friends were there, just that intense feeling of like, I belong, I can hang out with these people, you know. And the chemical feeling just enhanced all of that as well, you know. So, you know, after that episode, I didn't use again for quite some time, but what happened was I thought about it constantly. non-stop about using a gun. That's what happened with me. I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And after probably about 2 or 3 months, it became a regular weekend thing for me. Go out, you know, I'd use, and it was fun. It really was fun at the beginning for me, and I really loved it. I loved that scene. I loved hanging out with those people. And pretty soon, you know, things kind of changed, you know, and I didn't realize at the time when it changed. I just started feeling all of a sudden like I'd gone, I'd used, and the morning, the morning after became so bad. You know, I was constantly having this really bad come downs, you know, and the people that I was hanging out at the time, they told me, no, you just got, you know, if you're going to have a come down, you've got to take some of this. I thought, okay, cool, that is a solution, you know. So that's what I did. You know, I started taking these sleeping tablets, you know, and it made me sleep, you know. And so it went on, you know. So now I could use, and I could, you know, I could actually sleep as well, you know, after coming home, you know, going out on a Friday night, coming home on a Sunday afternoon, and I could sleep, you know. So I kind of felt like I'm doing okay, you know. And I finished high school. I sort of just scraped through, you know, by the skin of my teeth. And I landed a job, my first job, you know. Up until then, I wasn't like earning any money or anything. You know, I was just getting like money from my parents. And I landed this job, and it was fantastic because for the first time, I was getting paid. I was working in this call center. And there were like loads of people my age, and they were all using as well, and they were going out every weekend, every night of the week, and I thought it was fantastic, you know, because now I had more friends to use with, and a friend of mine was staying in the same, you know, I come from a neighborhood in Cape Town called Woodstock, and everything, you know, the basically, like every second house, there's drug dealers living, you know, in certain, not in the whole neighborhood, but sort of, it's quite infamous for sort of drug dealers and for using, and every single drug came through that neighborhood, you know. And, you know, I started sort of looking at, you know, people who were not only, you know, people that I was working with, but people who were sort of standing on street corners who were selling drugs, and you know, and I got attracted to that as well. You know, I really got attracted to that street life, that street mentality. You know, and soon enough I sort of like squeezed my way in there. You know, so I had a job where I was supposed to be like a normal person. And my parents thought, you know, I was like a well behaved kind of guy, you know. And then I had this other part of me that I was hanging out with these people on the streets, you know. And then I had this other lifestyle where I was going out clubbing with these people on, you know, on weeknights or weekend nights. And so I had like quite a lot of sort of masks going for me. You know, I heard that word, your masks. I didn't know about that. And I kind of kept it up for a while, you know, because what had happened is I didn't realize it then, but I'd moved from that thing of it being, you know, I'm just going to be experimenting. Now I'm just going out, now I'm young, this is what young people do. And it moved from just being that experimenting thing to actually being a lifestyle. And I didn't see that, you know. And, you know, one day a friend of mine introduced me to crack cocaine. And I just didn't turn back since then. You know, the ecstasy was no longer, you know, of any relevance to me. You know, I think about, like, my mentality at the time was like, why do you want to take ecstasy when you can smoke crack? It just didn't make sense to me, you know, and that's what I did, you know. I love the words that they use in, you know, when I came here and I heard that, like, you know, we use drugs. You know, no, we took drugs. We use them, you know, and that's what I did. I really use drugs, you know, and you know, with the crack, you know, it really, it happened really fast for me. And from the first letter I used, I kept on craving, kept on thinking about it, and I was sort of just off with crack. You know, and my using with crack wasn't, it wasn't glamorous at all. You know, what it came down to really was me sitting in my bedroom, because I live with my mom and dad. You know, I hear people saying in meetings, you know, I came into Narcotics Anonymous and, you know, I lost my car, lost my job, I lost my house. I didn't have any of that even. You know, I didn't even get to that stage, because all I could do was use crack, right? So where it got me really was in my room, sitting in front of my mirror with the light off and a candle in my room, in my underwear, looking for little pieces of white specks on the floor, and then constantly opening my door very slowly to see if my mom and dad's downstairs. And, you know, I loved the part, the chemical effect that it gave me, but it had already reached that point where I didn't want to do it. And I knew already, because, you know, when people speak about that thing of like, I just decided to go buy a loaf of bread and I ended up at the dealer, I'm that guy. You know, because my pattern became, I'd get paid, you know, and as soon as I got paid, it's like, cool, I'm going out this weekend, and I'd go straight to the dealer, and I'd score, and I'd just use, and I'd spend my monthly salary within 2 days, and then I'd go to my mom, and I'd say, Mom, I got robbed. And my dad would say, he robbed himself again. He was on my step four. and that's sort of how it went, you know. I was robbing myself, you know, and I hated the fact that my old man could see through, he could sort of see through all that, you know, all those lies, all those, you know, that manipulation. And so what I did was, you know, I engineered a very cunning plan to play my mom against my dad and my dad against my mom. You know, so whenever my dad would be upset with me because, you know, I'd be out using, I'd just go to my mom and I'd be like, yeah, you know, he doesn't understand me and I'm trying so hard, you know, and it's hard being me. And, you know, and I come up with all this stuff. And, you know, I spoke to my mom recently. I spoke to her about 2 weeks ago and we were talking about this, you know. And it's funny because she said to me, like, you know, I felt at that time, like, I really felt, what could I have done different? You know, how could I have made things different? You know, I blamed myself a lot. And I just said to her, well, you know, like, there's nothing, you've done what you had to do. You know, I couldn't ask for more, you know. I learned in treatment that, you know, as addicts, we take hostages. I didn't understand that, you know, because when I got into treatment, I couldn't really see my part in anything. You know, I just couldn't. I was incapable of seeing my part in anything, you know. So, you know, getting back to the crap days, you know, that went on and on and on and on. And, you know, I was hanging out. From now, I'd moved already from, you know, any of those guys on the club scene. Wasn't hanging out with them anymore. I was just hanging out with guys on the street, you know, and, you know, one night I'd sort of, we'd run out of drugs, we'd run out of money, and we decided, well, how are we going to get more money? You know, and we were walking, and we walked past this hotel, and we decided, that's what we'll do. We'll break into this hotel, and we will steal whatever's there, and we'll have money. So I'm really, like, super high, and I've already taken, like, loads of sleeping tablets at the same time as well. And we break into this hotel with a little screwdriver downstairs at the window, the basement area. And I think we were moving in slow motion because the security guard stood there for a while looking at us while we were doing it. And he came across us and he said, like, gentlemen, what do you think you're doing? And I said, you know, I just kind of stood there in my mouth, like I can actually remember, but I was just standing there and I couldn't even speak. And my friend said, run. And we couldn't, you know, we just couldn't run. I was just there and they took us upstairs. They took us to the security office. We just waited there and they called the police. And the police picked us up. And that was the first time that I went to a prison cell. I got there and, you know, they put me in the cell. And I can't remember much more because I remember, like, I was just, like, really... The drugs had really, you know, got into me. And I couldn't hardly do anything. I was sitting there. You know, my mom and dad came down. They were like, you know, why is this guy down again, you know? My mom was, oh, where's my boy? Where is he? You know, and I was, like, locked up. And, you know, like, when I got out, you know, because I stayed there for the day and then I came out the next day. And my dad, you know, my dad gave me that look of disappointment. You know, he said to me, I remember sitting, I just came out of jail and I was sitting on my bed. And my dad looked at me and he said to me, why do you keep on doing this? Why do you keep on doing this to yourself? And the funny thing is, that was actually like the first honest answer that I said to him. I said, like, I don't know. I really don't know why I do this to myself. And, you know, at that time, like, I felt like that feeling of, like, remorse, you know. And I remember that evening, like, I got a call from my friend saying, like, oh, what are you doing tonight? And that feeling of remorse just disappeared. And my head had gone back to, oh, you know, they're going out tonight. They're going to be doing this. You know, I've got to be doing that as well, you know. And, you know, and one of the conditions of, you know, when I came out of, because it was my first offense, they said I need to go to a drug information school where you sort of go there once a week and there's other kids who have committed sort of like drug offenses and you go there and you kind of talk about how you can change, you know. And I went there and I just like learned like loads of new cool stuff on how to use and not get caught. Because you know, all the kids there were basically like saying like, no, you gotta do it this way, do it that way, you know, I do this is the way I go about doing it, you know. So I didn't really take in anything that happened there, and I think, if I remember correctly, hospitals and institutions did a chair there. You know, a guy came in, he did a chair there, he told us his life story. I can remember he was sharing about carrying his mom's microwave out of the kitchen, you know. And I was thinking, like, how could someone speak so honestly about what they've done? Like, is he silly? Why would he want to admit something like that? You know, and, you know, long story short, I got out, I sort of finished up my time at the drug information school, and they gave me this booklet, you know. They gave me this small little booklet, and I remember on the booklet it said, there were, like, loads of, like, helpline numbers in it. And on the booklet it said, like, don't get hectic, get help. And there was this number on it. And for some strange reason, I kept that in my cupboard at home. You know, I don't know why, but I kept it in my cupboard, you know. And a while after that, you know, I got to that point, you know, when they speak about, you know, rock bottoms. You know, I got to that point where I remember it clearly. I was sitting, you know, at home on my sofa. It was a Monday morning. And sitting there, I was supposed to be at work, I was crying, you know, I'd been out the night before, you know, I was using again, it was one of those, you know, this is the last time scenarios, and I remember sitting there with the telephone, and at that point my mom used to have like this code that she'd lock the telephone with, because I can't be using the phone, you know, raking up sky high bills and not paying for it. And strangely enough, that morning, she hadn't locked the phone. And I was sitting there and I remember, like, for the first time, like, I kind of, like, I don't know what I spoke to, but I said, like, I just need help. I really need help. And I went to my cupboard and I got this book out and there was a number on there. And I looked at the back and there was a number. And it said, like, you know, like, drug helpline, you know, and then I didn't call the number, you know, and then I got out the yellow pages and I looked up drugs in the Yellow Pages, and I remember it said, like, under the drug section in the Yellow Pages, it says, like, see Narcotics Anonymous on page, you know, 100 or something, and I turned there, and that was the helpline number, and I called the number, and I spoke to this woman on the other line, and I told her, like, I think, you know, that I've got this problem, you know, and I said to her clearly, I said to her, like, the problem is that whenever I drink, then I want to smoke crack, you know. And she said to me, like, but in such a sort of, like, nonchalant way, like, oh, yeah, you know, maybe you should just go to a meeting. Or I was like, what is she talking about? And she said to me, well, there's a group of people that meet actually today at 1 o'clock. And it's quite close by where you live. And I said, like, no, I don't think I want to do that. And she said to me, well, I tell you what, why don't you give me your mom's, because I told her that my mom's not home. She said, like, why don't you give me your mother's telephone number at work, and I'll call her for you. And I'll tell her, if you really want to get clean and you're tired of this, then I will call her. You know, and I gave her the number. I didn't think twice, I just gave her the number. And that night my mom came home from work, dad came home, they sat me down, they said to me, we're really happy that finally, you know, you kind of want to do something about this, because for a long time we've been watching you. For a long time we couldn't do anything, you know. For a long time I thought no one knew. For a long time I thought, like, yeah, I'm the international man of mystery, like, no one knows. You know, and you know, within 2 weeks I was taken into a treatment facility. It's a 12-step treatment facility. I mean, I hear people having the, you know, the talk about, no, I didn't go to treatment, or I did go to treatment. I don't really think it matters, you know. For me, as long as I'm here in a meeting, you know, however I got here, I'm sitting in a meeting tonight, you know. I went to treatment center, and I remember arriving there on the Sunday, and Sunday was family day, and people were there with their families, and my mom and dad dropped me off. And I kind of, I did this special and different walk. You know, I walked and everyone was sitting outside, beautiful garden. Everyone sitting, talking to their families, hugging. And I walked and I thought, like, what is going on here? You know, I just felt so special and different. Just felt so bad about myself, you know, the low self-esteem. You know, sitting on my own, trying to look cool, had my glasses on in the corner. And this guy came over to me, and he said to me, oh, what kind of addict are you? Like, no, I'm not an addict. What are you talking about? And he said, what do you use? And I said, I use cocaine now and then. I don't want to say crack. And he said to me, oh, you're just another, what's the word he used? Common variety junkie. Common garden variety junkie. And I looked at him and I said, like, how dare you say that about me? You know. And I kind of sat there, and, you know, the rest of the afternoon I sort of spent there looking and feeling very special and different. And, you know, the next day was the Monday morning, and it was sort of group. And there were about 30 people that were in there at the time. And I remember we went into the circle of death. You know, it started off by someone saying, hi, my name is Joe and I'm an alcoholic. I was thinking, like, what are these people doing? And they started getting around, my name's Samantha and I'm an addict, and this one's a gambling addict. And then I was like, what is going on here? And it's like, it's kind of coming to my side now. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking down and thinking, like, what am I going to say? And it gets to me and I'm like, when it's one and I'm an addict. And I look down. And it didn't mean anything to me at that point. I was really scared and nervous. I felt, you know, when I say that, I felt so bad about myself, you know, because, you know, I remember reading at the back of comic books when I was younger, Archie comics and Batman comics, you know, they'd have like little things like, Batman says, say no to drugs, you know. So when I started using, I didn't really, you know, when I started using, I never ever saw it as it's something that's harming me, you know. Because I always, as a kid, I used to think, like, I'll never do that. Now, I saw people in my road who were like using and stuff, and I didn't see them using, but I knew my mom used to say, like, you don't mix with those boys, eh? You don't hang around with those boys at all. And I knew to stay away from those boys, you know? And, you know, when I got into treatment and I was kind of sitting there and they went around in that circle and they said, I'm an addict, and you know, that feeling of feeling bad in myself was sort of soon made even worse, you know, because after that, my counselor, he said to me, like, you know, let's have a chat, you know, and then, you know, he spoke to me and he said to me, like, you know, like, spoke to your mom and dad, they're very concerned, you know, you're going to be here for the next 3-4 weeks, you know, and you're going to work through stuff. He said, just try and be honest and real about stuff. He says, and he said to me, like, you're not as bad as you think you are. I remember him saying that to me. And I was thinking, like, I wonder what this guy's game is, you know. And after that, I went to the toilet. And I remember standing in the toilet and looking at myself in the mirror. And it's the first time I looked in the mirror for ages. And I looked myself dead in my eyes, you know. I just kind of stood there and looked at myself. And I just, you know, it's like I just looked into the abyss. I felt so lost. Like, I couldn't recognize myself. And it really took me, you know, I really had to get away from everything that I was doing to kind of just get to that simple point of looking in the mirror, you know. And so what I did was I kind of stuck it out in treatment, you know, and we did the group thing and, you know, we did like loads of different things that you do when you're in treatment, and it got to the last day and they used to have the ceremony where, like, when someone's leaving, you know, they kind of like, somebody in the group who was your buddy in the group, they say something nice about you, and then your counselor says something nice and motivational to you as well. And you know, my buddy's name was Stuart, and he was like, yeah, you're a really good guy, and you know, we're gonna do meetings when I get out as well, and we're gonna hang out. And I was like, yeah, I felt like really good. And then my counselor, he looked at me and said to me, yeah, I've seen hundreds of people like you come in these doors. I was like, what? And he said to me, when you go home tonight, don't go to your girlfriend, go to a meeting. I remember telling that straight, and I was like, what is wrong with this guy? He's stealing my moment of glory, you know, I'm graduating. Now I've done all of my 3 steps here, you know, what is this guy's problem? And you know, I got out, and I remember going that night. My dad took me, you know, I asked him, like, I said, I got to go to this meeting. He had a meeting list. My mom and dad had a meeting list. They knew exactly where I was going. They dropped me off at meetings. And I went there, and massive meeting, you know, came in there. And I remember, like, I can clearly remember the secretary at that meeting. As I came in through the door, like, he smiled, and he just, like, nodded at me. And he gave me that recognition that we get in these rooms. And it was so important, you know. It's like he didn't say anything to me, but he just gave me that smile. And I just felt like a little bit comfortable, you know. And I kind of sat down. Can't remember anything that they really spoke about in that meeting. But, you know, I kind of did what, you know, what other people, you know, say in these meetings of, you know, the keep coming back thing. This is the part where I start telling you guys the cliches. I went to that meeting. And they told me that, you know, there's loads of other meetings. Because the list that the treatment center had given my mom and dad, that was sort of an out-of-date list. So I got a more up-to-date list at that meeting. And at the end of that meeting, a big guy, like a really big fat guy, came up to me. He was, and he gave me this bear hug. But like one of those, like real hugs where they don't let go. You know, and it was interesting. But, you know, I started hearing things at meetings, you know, I started hearing things and I started saying things like, oh, you know, get a sponsor. And, you know, I just got to own this, is that when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I really felt, even though I'd been through all this stuff with my using, you know, I really felt like I'm too young to be here. You know, because I cleaned up when I was 20, you know. And I felt really like, oh, I'm robbed of life. You know, all my friends are out there. You know, they're still enjoying themselves. You know, I remember when I heard in treatment and they said to me, you know, you got to stop using, you know, the drugs is not good for you. I said, but you got to stop drinking as well. That was something that was quite like, really hit me. Because even though I never drank a lot, you know, I kind of felt like what do you do if you don't drink? Because I thought that if you drink, you're still kind of normal, you know, and you kind of accept it by society, it's okay to drink, you know. So when I got out, and I remember Friday nights, you know, in summer in South Africa, and the sun's starting to set, and it's really, really hot, you know, and there's this kind of buzz that everybody's going out, the city's getting sort of busy, everybody's kind of getting dressed, and I'm playing Snakes and Ladders. You know, and I'm hanging out with these people in the rooms, and it was really hard at the beginning, you know, because I really felt bad about myself. You know, I don't know about other people, but like, you know, what I thought about myself, I just felt like really, really low about myself, you know. And it was kind of like really hard, like even, you know, going for coffee with people. You know, because people would sit there and they'd have conversations or they'd say, oh, we went to a movie last night and they were talking about this normal stuff that normal people talk about. And I didn't know what to say to them. Because, you know, I had reached that point where I could only speak about drugs to people. Like, I had this master's degree in talking about drugs, you know, and I had this degree in telling stories. You know, like, I'd love to sit and just talk to people about what I did. Or what I'm going to do, you know? And if you had an interesting story, right, that you told, I'd steal your story as well and make it mine, you know? So, you know, coming from that point, suddenly sitting in a coffee shop, everybody's looking really squeaky clean, you know? Everybody's, you know, talking in this recovery tone about honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, you know? I'm sitting there thinking, like, what are these people talking about? You know, and I think what happened is that the more I went to meetings, the more I heard, and the more I sort of understood what people were talking about, you know, and I kind of did what everyone else was doing, you know, I got a sponsor, you know, and I really liked this guy because, you know, he did a really good chair, and he had this American accent when I heard him speaking at this meeting. And he seemed to be quite popular with the women as well. I feel like he's going to be my sponsor. You know? And so I went up to him and I said to him, after this meeting, I said, you'd like to be my sponsor? And he said to me, like, yeah, I'll be your sponsor, but you do know if I'm going to be your sponsor, you need to call me. I thought, okay, I can do that. And I think my higher power put me in a place where I was working in a call center. At the time, again, I was working in another call center, this time clean. I had access to the phone 24 hours a day, and all I did was call my sponsor every day. And I think he was sorry that he told me that I needed to call him. Because I called him every single day, you know, and that's something that I did consistently. You know, I just constantly just called him, and he'd be busy at work. He was a diamond setter, and he'd be busy at work, and I'd be calling him, and he's busy with clients and stuff. And then some days it was just like, hey, how are you doing? Can't really talk to you now. Like, speak to you later, and then he'd call me later again, you know. And we'd have these sponsee meetings as well, you know. I'd go then. I remember the first time, you know, that something really stood out for me was he said I should come around, we're going to have a meeting. I went to his sort of like his studio, and he'd left the safe open. And was sort of like bags of like little diamonds lying there. And I thought, like, doesn't this guy know who I am? Doesn't know who I am? You know, and he just kind of like left it open. You know, and the second thing I can remember that kind of stood out for me was I was probably about 7 months clean when my mom, she just said to me casually, like, oh, here's my card. Can you go and draw some money and bring the money up to me? You know, and she just did that. And, you know, I didn't realize until later how important that was. You know, I didn't realize, you know, like how my mom was sort of just practicing what we try and do here, which is spiritual principles, you know. And that meant a lot to me, you know. And so what I did was, you know, so I got the sponsor, you know, I got the sponsor and I'm doing these meetings. 5 minutes. I thought it was going to be longer than this, but okay. you know, I'm doing this stuff, you know, I've got the sponsor, and eventually, you know, we got around to doing a bit of step work, you know. And I say eventually because for a long time, like, I heard people in meetings saying, you've got to do the steps. You've got to do the steps. The steps, you've got to do the steps. And I started telling people, you've got to do the steps. I wasn't doing them. I was just like, you've got to do the steps. And that's all that could come out of my mouth. I'd hear old timers speaking meetings and I would mimic them. I'd say what they were saying. I was sick as hell. You know. So I'm telling people, and you know, people coming into the rooms, that this is what they need to do, and I'm not doing it. You know. And I found that that is something in my recovery that I constantly need to inventory. Because I constantly need to look at me. You know, if I'm not doing that, I'm looking at other people. You know, got 5 minutes left. You know, I'm gonna sort of cut it really short. You know, the way things are for me today, I'd say that only looking at it now, you know, I feel like, you know, I consider myself as a newcomer to this program. You know, I've been clean for just like a couple of months, over 8 years now. But you know, I kind of feel like the longer I stay clean, and I heard people saying this in meetings before, the longer they stay clean, the less they know, the more they need to do. And it is that way for me, you know. Because what happens is I become that guy that thinks I know everything. You know, I have conversations with people who are experts in their fields. You know, I remember speaking to a guy in meetings. He was some sort of like IT guy, and I started telling him about these things like I know about it. And he looks at me and he's like, no, it's not. I was like, no, it is. And he's like, actually, I work in IT. And I said, oh. You know, so it's like, I am really one of those people that kind of think I know everything. You know, and I'm not just saying that because that's like a thing that you hear in meetings. I am like that. You know, I have knowledge about things that I have no knowledge about. So, you know, like what happens is that, you know, it's funny, but at the same time, it's very dangerous. You know, like, I've been one of those people in recovery, you know, like people say like, oh, you know, I got clean and I got this job and I've been able to hold down a job. I haven't been able to hold down a job. I just keep on like not being in the, I either get fired or people's like, listen to me, we can't hold you here anymore, you know, it's come to an end, you know. But that's been my journey, you know, that I've sort of had to learn that way, you know. So at the moment I'm kind of doing like a bit of freelance work, you know. I like to kind of sit here and kind of share, you know, the joys of recovery, and you know, I'm doing well, and, you know, I got this and I got that, you know. But I think, you know, like, what I've got today is something that I didn't really set out for this, you know, when I speak about, you know, the spiritual awakening in step 12. No, I didn't really set out for a spiritual awakening, a personality change. I didn't set out for any of that. But in spite of what I set out for, you know, the principles and the actions that they speak about, you know, whether I believe it or not, if I'm doing it, you know, that comes, you know, that really comes. You know, I felt, you know, to sum it up, was I felt very biased. I felt very angry towards myself. You know, I had a low opinion of myself. I didn't think much about God, and I hated the rest of the world. You know, that's kind of how it was. And what happened is that I've had a change in all three of those elements. The way I think about myself today and the way I feel about myself is very different. You know, the way I think about the world is very different. What I feel about the world on some days is not very different. You know, some days I'm just like, I hate people. You know, some days I can't handle people. Mothers with prams and babies walking in front of me, but they know who I am. You know, people sitting on the bus or in the tube next to me reading newspapers with their arms really wide out, like, don't they know who I am? You know? And then lastly, you know, my the way I think and feel about, you know, my higher power. You know, I've got that today. You know, and I think that because I've got all three of those things today, I'm okay. You know, I'm really okay. And everything, you know, not some of it, but everything I'm about today is through Narcotics Anonymous. You know, through the 12 steps, through good sponsorship, you know, through you guys here, you know. And I'll just leave it there. Thank you for letting me share.
In NA, we celebrate 10.